This is the introduction for Decatur, Part 1.
Hello, this is Atah Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, December 10th, 2019. Hope you're doing well and staying warm. It's not supposed to get much above freezing today, if close at all. So we begin today's reading on the front page. Under the Education section, Meaning of Christmas, Students Observe Advent with Wreath Lighting Ceremony, and this article is by Valerie Wells. In Latin, the word Advent means coming. Christians, particularly in liturgical churches, celebrate with an Advent wreath during the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas. It features 3 purple candles, 1 pink, and often a larger white candle in the center, which stands for Christ. The 3 purple candles stand for hope, faith, and peace, while the pink one, the shepherd's candle, is for joy. One is lit each week until all 4 are lit, and the Christ candle is lit on Christmas Eve. Our Lady of Lourdes School observes the Advent wreath tradition with a ceremony on Monday mornings, one for the younger children, another for the older students. The school uses electric candles in the interest of safety. We enjoy this time together, getting ourselves ready for the special gift that's going to be born on Christmas Day, said Principal Teresa Bowser. And as we're giving to others, I see our box is filling up down here for Northeast Community Fund, where we're collecting those scarves and those hats. We talked about preparing ourselves and giving to others. That's what Christmas is all about. To emphasize what Christmas is all about, Bowser played for the students a piece of A Charlie Brown Christmas, where Linus answers that question for Charlie Brown with Luke 2:8-14, the account of the angels announcing to the shepherds in the fields that the Savior has been born. When Bowser asked how many of the kids have seen A Charlie Brown Christmas, nearly all of them raised their hands. And when she told them she first saw it when she was their age, more than a few pairs of eyes widened to think it's been around since before they were born. Our word for the day and for the coming week is peace, and we don't forget about hope, Bowser said. She also reminded the children that this week marks the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, the date that Catholics believe the Virgin Mary was conceived without sin. Mary said, "Yes, I will give birth to your child, Jesus," Bowser said. Wow, what hope she provided us. One of the ways the Jewish people prepared for the eventual coming of the Messiah, Bowser said, was to pray and to be patient, even though they waited hundreds of years. They never stopped praying, she said. They never lost hope. Advent is the time that we pray and wait for the celebration of Christ's birth. When she urged the students to perform acts of kindness during the week to live out the concept of peace, Kavion Howell, a third grader, said, "Actions speak louder than words." The Advent wreath ceremony is important, said first grader Sydney Guzin, who so we can celebrate Jesus' birthday more. Another way the students can learn that giving is better than receiving is the Santa Shop, run by the parent-teacher organization, where classes took turns on Monday choosing gifts for their families. They could even wrap them on the spot, so it really would be a surprise. It's an opportunity for the children to do something for parents and family without an adult family member knowing what they're getting, said volunteer Amy Smith. They work with a company that provides a variety of items to stock the shop. Small and inexpensive things for children to give their families and even their pets if they want to. Darrow Akpoigby had brought a list to ensure he didn't forget anything. "Everyone can find something here to get for their parents, their dad, their mom, their grandpa, their aunt," Darrow said. And some really beautiful photos that accompany this article. Some of the best photos I think we've had in the Decatur Herald and Review in a long time. Advent wreaths contain purple, pink, and white candles, each with a different meaning. And it's just on a bright blue, royal blue table, with some beautiful wreaths and berries, and then the candles. And it looks like a nativity scene out of focus in the background, but still visible. And beautiful photo again of the table we just mentioned with the wreaths and the candles, but then a larger shot of the students and the tree. Students gather with Principal Teresa Bauer to light the Advent candle on Monday at Our Lady of Lourdes School in Decatur. So they're all sitting attentively. Looks like she's answering a question. And then another similar photo as well. All right. We move on to the Pump House campaign to save Pump House receives a late reprieve. U.S. Army Corps of Engineers asks Tate and Lyle about selling. And this article is by Tony Reed from Decatur. Supporters battling to save the historic A.E. Staley Manufacturing Company Pump House celebrated an 11th-hour reprieve for the doomed building at a public meeting in Decatur on Monday night. The Save the Pump House organization, formed to protect the centrally old building from the wrecking ball, trumpeted a letter from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers that said the organization will be given a chance to try and negotiate a deal to buy the place. The pump house, disused for decades, has been scheduled for demolition by its current owners, Tate and Lyle, but a permit for the demolition is needed from the Corps of Engineers, Rock Island District, which has now granted Save the Pump House consulting party status while it considers the permit. That means, I don't know that this makes sense, I'll just read it. That means said a letter from the Corps that the permit will now be withheld to give the group a chance to strike a deal with Tate and Lyle to buy the pump house. The letter said the Corps has already requested Tate and Lyle to determine if they would be willing to sell the Staley pump house structure. If the company says yes, then the pump house supporters will have 30 days from that date to try and work out the details. Brant Volman, an archaeologist working with the Corps, said if no deal is struck, the Corps will proceed with the paperwork necessary for the demolition. But it's far from a watertight salvation. Volman's letter said the effort could fail if both sides can't reach an agreement or Tate and Lyle simply decides that it is not interested in selling the structure. But speaking to a crowd of more than 50 who showed up for Monday's meeting, hosted at Richland Community College, Brett Robertson, who is heading efforts to save the pump house, was clearly pleased. "I think that is a tremendous asset for us," he said of the consulting party status. "It gives us a seat at the table, and it will require a formal response from Tate and Lyle." A spokesperson for England-based Tate and Lyle, given the time zone difference, did not immediately respond when emailed by the Herald and Review seeking comment. The company has said the structure is dilapidated and that it has spoken over the years with parties who were interested in buying the building but never followed through. Robertson told the meeting he was also waiting for a response from them, and he hopes the Decatur City Council will also encourage the company to cooperate. The city had previously issued its own permit allowing demolition, but Councilman David Horn, present at the meeting, said the chance to save the pump house was worth consideration. "I think we should absolutely explore that and have dialogue about that," he added. The building off US 36 was constructed in 1919 and was used to deliver water to Staley plants. Its clubhouse hosted numerous social events over the years and serves as the background of fond memories for many Decatur residents. Robertson introduced a seven-phase plan at the meeting as a roadmap for pump house salvation. It ranged from basic repairs, weatherproofing of the structure, and creating access all the way up what Robertson describes as the return to grandeur, fully restoring the interior and exterior. The aim would be to recreate the pump house as it was in its glory days when it housed water pumping machines for the former A.E. Staley Manufacturing Company processing plant with elaborately furnished meeting space and event rooms above. Robertson said each phase of the work could be funded separately and proceed as the money becomes available. Many big questions remain, however, including how much is the total price tag and who is going to foot the bill. Robertson said he hoped community fundraising donations and gifts of work in kind would go a long way in getting it done. He said a phased plan meant work could stop at any stage. He said the concrete pump house is equipped to wait for better times. Left alone, it will still be there 500 years from now, he added. Tate and Lyle is meanwhile in the process of stripping hazardous materials like lead paint out of the pump house, which Robertson said happens to be a necessary part of its restoration. The problem for those who want to save the building, however, is that Tate and Lyle's contractors are carrying out the work as the first steps in a demolition process. Reaction from the audience at Monday's meeting included some skepticism about the cost and getting the fundraising done. But the vast majority there said it was worth a try. If we lose this, we lose some of our heritage, said Bruce Sim, 71, a Decatur resident who visited the pump house in its heyday. And we have lost enough of it already. And there is a very small photo here. Workers could be seen on site at the pump house last month as plans to tear down the structure move ahead. Macon County Courts, still on the front page here. Richardson sentenced to life in double murder. This article's by Tony Reed from Decatur. Quantrevis D. Richardson was sentenced Monday to spend the rest of his life in prison for the brutal double murder of two Decatur men. Richardson, 22, was convicted October 25th after a four-day Macon County Circuit Court jury trial concerning the beating and gunshot killings of Michael E. Roberts, Methenia, 43, and Jonathan T. Balance, 34, on Halloween night, 2017. Judge Jeffrey Geisler sentenced Richardson to two counts of natural life for each murder conviction. Richardson, who maintained his innocence throughout, said he would appeal. Both mothers of the murdered men fought back tears as they read victim impact statements to the court. Marilyn Roberts said the emotional pain of Roberts' Methenia's death had ripped the heart out of her family, and described the suffering of his grandmother, with whom he was particularly close. "You not only killed Mike, you killed his grandmother," said Roberts, staring at Richardson. "You killed a piece of all of us." Brenda Balance said she missed her son every moment of every day and lives a life of denial, denial that he's gone. "But I am wrong, all wrong. I will never get to hear his voice again. I will never get to give him a hug. And most importantly, I will never get to say I love you or hear him say I love you too, Mom." Speaking on his behalf before the judge passed sentence, Richardson's aunt told him, "We love you." She told the victim's family she prayed for them, but the court had convicted the wrong man. Security for the verdict was airtight, with 8 court security and sheriff's deputies guarding the courtroom, and more officers outside. Additional police patrols could be seen watching the court parking lot, ensuring that Richardson's family and the family of the victims remain separated. Richardson's family members called out, "We love you, and it ain't over, we promise you that," as he was led away from the courtroom. Evidence in the trial, including harrowing photos showing Roberts, Methenia, and Balance, had been repeatedly bludgeoned before being shot to death in a hail of bullets at a home in the Park City Mobile Home Park. The prosecution said Roberts Methenia was a drug user who owed money to Richardson, his dealer. Defense attorney Chris Amaro told the jury that there was little direct evidence linking Richardson to the crimes and said his client had been visiting the victims when he found them dead and fled in panic. But the prosecution's evidence presented by Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott and First State's Assistant State's Attorney Nicole Kroenke was difficult for Amaro to overcome for the jury. They heard police-taped phone calls Richardson made to his ex-girlfriend confessing to the crimes, and they also saw a videotape confession from the defendant where he was being questioned by detectives. And we move on to page A3, local and state police. Woman defended herself. Man wounded in shooting, both facing preliminary charges. This article is by Kennedy Nolan from Decatur. Police say a Decatur woman shot the 33-year-old father of her child to defend herself after he attacked her while she was in a vehicle Sunday evening. Sergeant Chris Copeland said officers were sent at 6:50 p.m. to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital in response to the man having been shot in his right side. He told police the woman had shot him in front of his home in the 3800 block of East Grand Avenue, Copeland said. Police began their investigation and contacted the 29-year-old woman, who voluntarily came to the Decatur Police Department for questioning. Copeland said the woman had several injuries to her face from the man battering her while she was inside of her vehicle. She had a shunt in her head from a previous injury, and a blow to the head could be fatal, Copeland said. The woman told police she shot the man in self-defense, Copeland said. He said the woman is not facing charges for the shooting, but is facing a preliminary charge of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon for lack of a concealed carry license. She is being held in lieu of $75,000. The man was arrested and is facing preliminary charges of domestic battery and unlawful vehicular invasion. He posted $10,000 bond. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. Two arrested after gun and drugs found in vehicle. Kennedy Nolan, Decatur. A 22-year-old man on parole is facing a preliminary charge after officers found drugs and a gun in his vehicle, court documents say. A sworn affidavit said Decatur police officers conducted a consensual encounter with a man driving a black Mercedes as he pulled into the 1700 block of North Church Street. The man began shuffling around and reaching in the back seat of the vehicle, court documents say. The passenger, a 46-year-old man, put a crack pipe on the ground outside of the vehicle, the affidavit said. Officers also located a push rod consistent with objects used to place crack cocaine into a smoking device. The driver was holding a plastic baggie before moving it underneath the driver's seat. According to the sworn affidavit, a canine alerted on the vehicle, prompting a search. Officers found a loaded handgun and 4.5 grams of a substance that field-tested positive crack cocaine, according to the affidavit. The 22-year-old was arrested, booked into the Macon County Jail, and is being held in lieu of $75,000 bond. He faces a preliminary charge of armed violence. The 46-year-old is facing a preliminary charge of possession of a controlled substance and is being held in the Macon County Jail in lieu of $2,000. Police say accounts differ in shooting. Numerous stories given by victim whose cousin faces charge. Kennedy Nolan, Decatur. Decatur police say they are left without answers after a 21-year-old man who was shot in the lip Sunday morning told officers several stories. Sergeant Chris Copeland said officers were sent to Decatur Memorial Hospital at 4:28 a.m. Sunday, responding to a gunshot victim. He said the 21-year-old was alert, but gave numerous different answers about how the shooting happened. The victim's 20-year-old cousin is facing a preliminary charge of obstructing justice after giving false information to officers, Copeland said. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. Bond has not been set as of Monday morning. It's unclear why the 21-year-old was not arrested, Copeland said. We're not sure what happened because of the numerous stories that were provided, Copeland said. Hanukkah menorah joins display at Capitol. Rabbi accompanying sign to be added soon. Holiday begins December 22nd. This article is by Rebecca Ansel from the Capitol News Illinois Bureau, Springfield. A Hanukkah menorah was added to the holiday display in the State House Rotunda Friday, joining a holiday tree, nativity scene, satanic sculpture, and winter solstice sign installed days earlier. Lubavitch Shabbat of Illinois, a group that aims to further the worldwide Hasidic Jewish movement, placed the symbol of spreading light and increasing light, Rabbi Meyer Moskowitz said. The menorah is the oldest symbol of the Jewish faith, a seven-branch candelabra of the nation of Israel, in order to be a light unto the nations, Representative Sarah Feigenholz, a Democrat from Chicago and a member of the Jewish caucus, said in an email. I am delighted that it is displayed every year in the Capitol Rotunda in celebration of the holiday. The office of Democratic Senator Rahm Villavillam from Chicago applied December 4th with the Secretary of State's office to install the holiday display addition. I have the largest concentration of Jewish constituents out of any district in the state, and so I see firsthand the different religions, cultures, and languages throughout my district, he said. I also see how important it is to celebrate each one and also recognize the commonalities that each one has with the other. Displaying the menorah is an opportunity that we have to bring people together. The religious group has displayed this menorah for many, many years, Moskovitz said, and it will be adding a new accompanying sign in the coming days. To celebrate Hanukkah, which begins the night of December 22nd, a staff member will light each bulb on the corresponding day, he added. Hanukkah is unique in that the message of Hanukkah is spreading light and increasing light. Every day we add one more, Moskovitz said. It's a universal message, especially nowadays when there is so much negative news. It's important to metaphorically and practically make positive news and light and goodness. Where is it more appropriate than the capital of this special state, he asks. The Lubavitch Chabad of Illinois also displays menorahs in Chicago at the Thompson Center and Daly Plaza, the site of the largest menorah in the state at 20 feet tall. And the caption reads, a Hanukkah menorah was added Friday to the holiday display at the Capitol Rotunda in Springfield. It has been displayed there for many years and soon will have a sign added to the presentation. And it's just a beautiful, very modern sculpture. And it stands several feet tall. And it's next to a sign at the season of the winter solstice. May reason prevail. There are no gods, no devils, no angels, no heaven or hell. There is only our natural world. Religion is but myth and superstition, the hardest that hardens hearts and enslaves minds. So this is the display they were referring to, and you can off to the right see a bit of a Christmas tree here, just a corner. Okay, moving on. We continue with the local and state news on page A5. State rep files to replace Sandoval. Villanueva lone candidate to file. This article is by Jamie Monks from the Chicago Tribune. Chicago Democratic State Representative Selena Villanueva was the lone candidate to file petitions to replace embattled State Senator Martin Sandoval, who announced last month he would resign from his Southwest Side seat. Villanueva, who has represented the Southwest Side and suburban 21st House District since July 2018, filed petitions Monday with the State Board of Elections for a spot on the March 17 primary ballot. The deadline to challenge those petitions is 5 p.m. Monday, December 16th. Sandoval, a Democrat who has served in the State Senate since 2003, submitted a resignation letter last month that said he would resign effective at 12:01 p.m. January 1st. The November 27th resignation letter came 2 months after federal agents raided Sandoval's Springfield office, seizing electronics and documents in search of information involving lobbyists, a cloud-heavy red light camera company, and several suburban elected officials. He resigned as chairman of the powerful Senate Transportation Committee in October, amid a growing chorus of calls within his caucus for him to step aside. Sandoval did not return to Springfield for the legislature's fall veto session, and he has not responded to requests for comment since the September searches. Democratic ward and township committeemen within the 11th district have 30 days after Sandoval's resignation takes effect to name a replacement to fill the seat. Sign up for the spin to get the top stories in political... I think this is a total error. It looks like this was inserted inadvertently, but it says sign up for the spin to get the top stories in politics delivered to your inbox weekday afternoons. Okay, that just appears in the middle of the story. So moving on, the general election is November 3rd. The State Board of Elections will certify those results in early December, and the winner will then be sworn in to serve out the rest of Sandoval's term, which expires in January 2023. It is long past time for ethical, principled progressive leadership to fight for the working families of the 11th District, Villanueva said in a statement last week announcing she was considering a run for the Senate seat. Before taking office last year, Villanueva was a civic and youth engagement manager at the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights. Edgar Gonzalez Jr. has filed petitions to run for Villanueva's 21st House District seat. Man 75 dies in Charleston house fire. JG-TC, Charleston. Authorities have identified the man who died Monday morning in a Charleston house fire as 75-year-old Wilburn Hudson. Coles County Coroner Ed Schneers said the cause of death hasn't been determined. An autopsy is scheduled for Wednesday. According to a Charleston Fire Department news release, fire crews found the deceased man inside the home at 411 North 4th Street after being called to the fire just after 6:30 a.m. The news release said the cause of the fire appears to be accidental but is still under investigation by the Illinois State Fire Marshal's Office and the Coroner's Office. The fire damage was limited, the release stated, but there was smoke and water damage throughout the house. Fire crews were at the scene until about 10 a.m. Monday, the news release said. The release also said the fire department received assistance with the fire from Charleston Police, the Mattoon Fire Department, and Ameren Corp. No injuries reported in ADM fire. This article is by Kennedy Nolan from Decatur. No injuries were reported in a fire that took place at an Archer Daniels Midland Company facility on Monday morning. Spokeswoman Jackie Anderson confirmed the fire occurred in the solvent extraction facility of the company's processing complex, 4666 Ferries Parkway. The fire was contained, but the company asked the Decatur Fire Department to be on site for assistance. The facility was evacuated as a precaution, she said. More reporters to be added to State House, the State Journal Register. Capital News Illinois, which placed 3 full-time reporters at the State House a year ago and provides stories to more than 400 Illinois Press Association member newspapers, will be expanding with the help of a matching grant from Report for America. Jeff Rogers, director of the Illinois Press Foundation and bureau chief of Capital News Illinois, overseeing the 3 reporters, said there is funding to hire a reporter emphasizing coverage of state issues and legislation and their effects on ethnic minority distressed in rural communities. The other position, also for a year starting in June, is for someone to provide video coverage of state issues and legislative sessions. Report for America, its website states, places talented emerging journalists in local newsrooms to report on undercovered issues in communities. Rogers said Report for America, which lists many funders on its website, including $5 million from Knight Foundation and $2 million from Facebook Journalism Project, will pay half of each salary up to $20,000 for each person. So the maximum grant amount will be $40,000. Rogers added journalists who want the job should apply to Report for America, which sends finalists from the Capital News Illinois will choose. Rogers said his organization applied for the grants to fill the gaps in coverage. He said he hears from editors in rural areas of southern Illinois, for example, that Springfield doesn't necessarily represent them. We'd like more coverage of things that are important to our communities, he said. Initial funders of Capital News Illinois were the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert T. McCormick Foundation. The State Journal Register is among newspapers that publishes stories generated by the Bureau. Well, and that has brought us to the end of the first half hour. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, December 10th, 2019. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.